Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardian ID podcast. This is Zach Martin, editor of the Guardian ID magazine. Today we're speaking with Jeff Negrini from Certipath and Molly Shield Julien with Safe Biopharma about the Four Bridges Forum. But before we dig in, first a word from our sponsor.
Picture a unique identity. Imagine that identity turning into one unique credential. Envision using that credential to enter facilities and log on to networks and applications. Diebold's Credential One solution mitigates the complexity and risks of managing multiple identities. Think one credential, multiple uses. Think Diebold Credential One. To learn more, visit www.credentialone.com.
How do we ensure online transactions? How do we know that the person on the other end of a transaction is who they say they are? How do we ensure that transaction without a high cost? These are all questions the Four Bridges Forum is looking to answer. Certipath, which serves the defense and aerospace industries, and Safe Biopharma, which serves the biopharmaceutical and healthcare industries, make up half of the Four Bridges Forum. The other two members are the federal PKI architecture, or the Federal Bridge, which serves federal agencies, and HEPCA, which serves the higher education sector in the U.S. The idea behind the forum is to help facilitate trusted electronic business transactions across major federal agencies, U.S.-based pharmaceutical companies, aerospace and defense contractors, and colleges and universities. Today, Jeff and Molly are going to talk about how that's done and where they see the forum going. Thanks for joining us today, guys.
Our pleasure.
So, first off, how did the Four Bridges Forum come to be? How did it start?
The Four Bridges Forum started by the recognition by our individual communities of the need for high trust and a legally enforceable digital signature among parties who are doing business electronically. And certainly the federal government started it with a federal bridge and a system of identity management across the federal government. But I think our individual communities also recognize that need. As we transition from the 20th century in the past that was, you know, steeped in paper and complex business processes around moving this paper around into the 21st century digital world, I think we realize that there are tremendous efficiencies to be gained, savings and other kinds of benefits from going fully electronic. But there are also risks associated with electronic, such as how can you be sure that you are transacting business or conducting a regulatory process with the person that you think you are? And secondly, how can you ensure that you can do business through contracts and other means? So certainly the federal government was very forward-leaning in establishing the federal bridge and the rules around the federal bridge. And our respective communities, certainly Safe Biopharma and Certipath, have cross-certified with the federal bridge. And the higher education bridge has cross-certified at the test level. And we all recognize that as business, and eventually all business, will move into cyberspace, we need an interoperable, trusted identity management standard, and we need a digital signature that is uniquely, mathematically linked to that identity so that one can conduct business across across this bridge. We all sit on the Federal Bridge Policy Authority, and we deal with technical problems there. But we also became aware that we need to raise awareness of users of the bridges. I mean, certainly from the biopharmaceutical industry perspective, we are a highly regulated industry. The federal government is probably the largest purchaser of medicines in the United States, across a variety of agencies. And so we see this as a real opportunity to not just take advantage of the technical infrastructure, but to drive use and bring real value to business and regulatory processes.
So you guys just pretty much started out recently. You guys had a big kickoff back in May, was it, or April?
We did it in April, yeah.
Okay. So where are you guys at now? What's like? What are you trying to accomplish right now? What is the like the number the top two things that you guys are trying to do?
Well, I think that the main thing for us right now, once we've gotten past sort of an initial outreach opportunity in the U.S. and specifically in the Washington area, is to broaden that outreach and that message to maybe further across the U.S., but also in the international space. We've been doing some work to identify a couple different venues within the EU to go and talk to, and some additional use cases. Certainly, Molly has lots of use cases within the pharmaceutical. I have lots of use cases within aerospace and defense, but we appreciate that there are many other business sectors out there that could take advantage of a trust ecosystem, such as the one that's brought about by having multiple bridges brought together. Certainly, a bridge identity topology is a good one. We've been able to demonstrate lots of positive returns with that, but the idea of being able to link several of those nodes together to achieve scale is where we'd like to take this. And so I think that our number one is doing just basic outreach and blocking and tackling to help people understand the benefits of a bridged PKI mechanism. And then number two is to promote as many possible use cases so that we can actually evangelize on the behalf of those people that have, you know, taken steps to avail themselves of this security mechanism.
Could each of you just take the time and give me one use case, Molly, from your perspective, and Jeff, from your perspective?
Okay, well, certainly from the Safe Biopharma perspective, members regularly make regulatory submissions that is not currently using the federal bridge. But we also are looking at something called a cross-jurisdictional public health surveillance project in which we're now working with the CDC, Minnesota public health officials, as well as Minnesota healthcare providers, to track public health threats on a real-time basis and then allocate medicines to them or send in vaccines on an as-needed basis. Currently, the public health surveillance process is based on, you know, telephone calls and emails, and it takes about a week for a public health official to actually gain real concrete information about patient cases, related to patient cases. Using a safe credential to credential doctors in practicing in near Duluth, Minnesota, and public health officials in Minnesota, they could then provide on a one-time basis access to CDC officials using their HSPD-12 credentials to authenticate into the system and give them direct access to patient files, which they currently almost rarely obtain.
Okay.
In the aerospace and defense sector, we have lots of logical use cases. We have ones like Northrop Grumman now and other large aerospace and defense contractors are exchanging digitally signed and encrypted email with a particular government agency, the U.S. DoD in this case. And that's something that's never been done before, and that's being facilitated through the bridge mechanism. So now Northrop and Lockheed and Raytheon are issuing credentials to their own employees, and those are being trusted by the U.S. Department of Defense and vice versa. And, you know, leveraging this group that we call the TSCP, or this Trans-Global Secure Collaboration Program, in their protocols, we've now been able to get around some of the thornier problems of key management and key distribution. And so, and I mean that from an encryption key perspective. And so that's now been a huge enabler for us to do all sorts of things that you would never think that you would do over the Internet, let alone using email as a transmission protocol. And it really highlights nicely the value of this bridge mechanism. But perhaps a more interesting one, just because it's a little more novel, is we've started leveraging it for physical access.
Hmm.
And so what we're doing now is actually something that we like to call federated PACS, or again, PACS stands for physical access. And this is where, say, somebody from the U.S. DoD or somebody from GSA or somebody from Boeing or Lockheed can actually come to the CertiPath offices and leverage their own employer-issued credentials to gain physical access to our building. And it's leveraging that exact same bridge mechanism behind the scenes that we would have used if we wanted to, say, protect a website or something like email or digitally sign a drug trial form. Now it's the same mechanism that decides who can and who can't come into my office on any given day.
The specs behind FIPS 201, doesn't that call for a PKI-based physical access control system, or is it what you're talking about go beyond that?
It does go beyond that because it recognizes not just credentials that were rooted in what's called the common policy. And the common policy is the certificate policy behind FIPS 201. So the quote-unquote federated pact is the idea that a bridge can correlate the common policy with, say, the currently the DoD's certificate policy with Northrop's policy with CertiPath policy. Now, HSPD 12 itself does call for physical access with the FIPS 201 smart cards. What is interesting, though, was in the first several deployments that we've seen, they use either the MagStripe or the Prox chip. They have never leveraged the PKI itself. It's using something called a FASTCAN, which is a long number. And, you know, much like we're trying to read, think of it as it's the username and password equivalent for physical access.
Right.
It's just playing a long number. And so, obviously, what we're doing is actually leveraging the PKI that's on the smart card, which was, you know, sort of the whole point initially.
That's pretty cool. I haven't heard anything like that before. Molly, you mentioned, you know, credentials, and you mentioned HSPD 12, and Jeff, you did the same. Is this going to be a smart card system? Is this going to be a PIV FIPS 201 system that is used to, you know, to store the certificate and the private keys?
I think that FIPS 140-2 is the commonly held standard when you want to have PKI that's stored in where the keys are stored in hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so FIPS 140-2 is the cryptographic container strength. And in fact, FIPS 201 incorporates FIPS 140-2 by reference. FIPS 201 goes on in great detail to talk about a smart card and talk about the layout of the smart card and talk about the operating system of the smart card. So what we're seeing, at least in aerospace and defense, is that FIPS 201 and PIV and PIV-I, the PIV interoperable, are desirable for physical access. We've not yet seen a compelling use case where somebody might want that for logical access. So let's say that an organization has issued Federal Bridge or SAFE or CertiPath compliant certificates, and they want to have them on hardware, and they've put them on USB tokens or USB smart card tokens instead of, say, an actual smart card. That doesn't make any difference for logical access as far as we can tell. Somebody in the future may come up with a compelling reason why it really should be a smart card form factor, but cryptographically speaking, both are the same. And so, but for physical access, well, now it's kind of important to be able to know that my reader is going to be able to be interoperable from a technology perspective with, say, all the visitors that are coming.
Okay.
So that's when a FIPS 201 or a PIV-I is actually fairly useful.
Something that was on your website that I'm curious about was cost. You say you guys want to try to offer the service at a lower cost. One of the things that's always been made of PKI is that it's in digital certificates that they're expensive, and they're expensive to deploy and to manage. How are you guys going to make this lower cost, or what's your take on that?
Well, speaking from the perspective of Safe Biopharma Association, I mean, we are a nonprofit that was established by really the world's leading biopharmaceutical companies to develop the digital identity and signature standard for the industry. And they have come together and actually funded an outsourced infrastructure. It's like a shared service for members. So that has certainly driven down the cost. And so what they have done for their own use is the fixed costs are essentially paid for out of membership fees, and so members pay only the variable cost for the credentials. So that is one way in which they've brought the cost way down. Certainly the technology has advanced over the last number of years, and the cost for acquiring the technology has been reduced very, very substantially. Currently in the pharmaceutical industry, I think the industry itself is highly partnered with external partners. I mean, it does business. It outsources huge portions of its business, and it is also global. So, for example, the industry has clinical investigators all around the world. Most of these investigators do clinical trials for multiple companies. So, for example, you go into Johns Hopkins and to a clinical investigator's office, and you'll see in a back room, you'll see three laptops and two USB fobs, and every one of them has a little yellow stickum on it that says, you know, National Cancer Institute, username, password. And then the USB fob says Pfizer, username, password.
Mm-hmm.
And so many, many clinical investigators have multiple identities, a different identity for every sponsor of a clinical trial. So certainly one of the driving forces behind the industry's creation of SAFE was to get rid of these multiple identities and to save money, and also to have a pool of external partners who are already credentialed and ready to, you know, up and ready to go.
I think from my perspective, what we have seen in the past is we've seen Identris, then we've seen ACES with the eGov, with the you know, GSA, the U.S. federal government. We've seen ECA with the DOD. All of these were typically relying parties trying to find ways to have a credentialing program that would feed credentials into them. And typically you would expect that an asserting party would worry about how to credential their people. And so you know, the model where a relying party tries to make the rules and then have some perhaps commercial bodies that then issue certificates or credentials underneath it is one that typically drives costs too. And then I say that because specifically it is for a relying party. And not all relying parties are going to accept that. I mean, case in point, all three of those credentials I just said, you will not find any sort of ubiquity of acceptance. And so instead, what we've said is, okay, we, the Four Bridge Forum, represent communities for asserting parties. And our commercial model is to have those asserting parties pay the money, and then quite literally our organization is to go convince relying parties that these are credentials worth relying on. And we don't charge relying parties. We're quite happy for them to use this for free. And that, in fact, is the whole value of the network and the value of the mechanism. And that's how we intend to get to scale, where we have one credential and one credential that goes anywhere that the individual, the asserting party, needs to go for their business. And provided that we can get to interoperability, then this means that Molly can have several credential providers under her, the Federal Bridge can have several credential providers under them, case in point, Intrust, Verizon, VeriSign, right, they're all SSPs, and then I can have a CertiPath several credential providers. And it shouldn't make any difference where somebody got their credential. And for that reason, then, not only do you achieve scale, but you also achieve some competition in the marketplace.
Right.
So it's this concept of one credential and multiple providers. And then that's, you know, and you can pick any market, any product. That's how you drive down costs.
Great.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
I concur.
What else is going on with Four Bridges Forum? What else do you guys want to add? What else should our listeners be aware of?
I think that the message for your listeners is they should take note. This is the future. Certainly, as we move into the electronic business space, we fundamental to that is an interoperable digital identity and signature system that recognizes each other and that doesn't create sort of a Tower of Babel. And this is the beginning of that system. It is based around the federal government structure, for which there are several million people already credentialed. It is growing upon that basic nexus of the federal government through these industry sectors. It is growing not only in the United States, but on a global basis. And so they should get on board.
Yeah, and I think I would simply add to that, it doesn't matter whether you've read the rhetoric from the U.S. DOD, from GSA, from Microsoft, from any of the defense players, from virtually any other country that's friendly to the U.S., you will see that every one of them believes that the identity fraud and the social engineering attacks that we're suffering today, especially in online environments, is largely rooted in us not having transactions based on face-to-face proofing, right, or the equivalent. And once you have done such an event, the strong binding of a person with their credentials to represent that has occurred at a reasonable point in the past, right, that hasn't been too long. And to the extent that we get there sooner rather than later, we will see a number of our internet-based social ills literally evaporate overnight. And I think that, more than anything, is what keeps certainly the Federal Bridge and Higher Education Bridge and Molly and myself busy every day.
Do you think this is going to lead to where everyday citizens, you know, if you're not connected with the federal government or you're not an aerospace or defense contractor or a biopharmaceutical company, do you think this is, will this eventually trickle down to the everyday Joe public to getting a credential to where they can assert their identity online?
I firmly believe that that's the case. In fact, I think there's all sorts of products and industries throughout history where you can say there have been three phases of adoption, especially technology that were sort of expensive or complicated at the beginning. And no doubt PKI falls into that category at the beginning. I don't think that's true today. But those three phases are, initially starts with the government, government funding R&D, government funding some of the initial adoption. Then you see it trickle down into business, and then the last piece is the consumer. And so I think that, you know, hardware-based, say, strong identity credentials. Today they're based on PKI. If tomorrow PKI is not the thing, you'll see certainly the four bridges migrate to something that's proven to be stronger if that happens. But the idea of strong identities is absolutely critical for all sorts of transactions. I guarantee it's the only way we're going to get to voting online.
And I think that that's certainly true for the healthcare sector, in which you really can't have patient records until you have strong security measures and strong identity. So I think it absolutely is the future.
Well, Jeff, Molly, unless there's something else, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to chat with us today.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to spread the gospel.
Will do.